From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Greener Views, a unique media resource for information, education, consultation, and fun. Greener Views is a part of the Healthy Homecast Network and is brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Each episode will introduce and connect you with services, products, practices, organizations, and groups that focus on the health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community of all. Find us on the web at www.greenerviews.net. And now, your host, Daryl Whalen.
Welcome to episode 24 of Greener Views. I am Daryl Whalen, along with audio engineer Randy Parcell and videographer Michael Schwartz. On our last episode, which was number 23, our guest was Kevin Moen from UseYourRoof.com. Joining us this time around is Stephen Seiden, who will be talking to us about his new book, A Fuller View, Nature's Generalized Principles, How and Why Fuller Sought to Learn and Understand All of Them, and How We Can Each Benefit from His Wisdom, and The Seven Steps to Global Citizenship. And he will also be helping us to answer such questions as, how can one person make a difference with his or her or his life, such as Bucky did? Why war and competition are obsolete in the new paradigm in which there is enough of everything to support all life on Earth, amongst other things. And we are talking about Bucky Fuller, Buckminster Fuller. I mentioned a fuller view, but that was not quite enough for people to catch on right away. Greener Views is a part of the Healthy Homecast Network and is brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. So let's get rolling. Welcome to the show, Stephen Seiden, and thank you for joining us this evening. Please tell us who is Stephen Seiden and why are you here today?
Who am I? Yeah, that's a good question. If I could answer that, that would be good. In terms of why I'm here is because of the new book, A Fuller View, Buckminster Fuller's Vision of Hope and Abundance for All. And I first saw Buckminster Fuller in 1973 or something like that, at a big symposium. There was maybe 8,000 people there. He walked on stage. They introduced him as Buckminster Fuller. He walks on stage, just a little old man. You know, he was about 5'4", thick glasses, hearing aids. And he sits down on a chair and he starts talking. And 5 hours later, he stopped. And the only reason he stopped, that was actually scheduled for, he was scheduled for like an hour and a half. But you know, this, you didn't stop the man. This was Buckminster Fuller. When he was famous. And so I had the same experience that I've heard many people talk to me about, because I've done a lot of Bucky Fuller stuff, which was they'd say, that was an amazing experience. It changed my life. I have no idea what he said. Because he was a presence when he was around. And I started working with him and the Friends of Buckminster Fuller Institute in 82 when we were doing these things called Integrity Days, which was, Bucky would talk about integrity for an entire day, which was the core of his message, actually. The last thing he ever said publicly was, people said, you know, you've done all this stuff, you're all this famous guy, what's the most important thing? And he said, the most important thing is personal integrity. Hold on to your integrity no matter what. So we were doing these integrity days, and then he died. And then I started doing other events with the audio and video that he had created, because there was lots and lots of it. And that led to writing, which led to this book, Buckminster Fuller's Universe, 500 pages. It's actually a readable biography, which is why I wrote it. I wrote it because people would ask me what they should read, and you don't read Bucky, you study it. It's not easy to do. So I'm here doing this now in the second book is basically because his vision has faded from the public spotlight as it was when he was alive. And when he died, actually, somebody told me, I don't remember who it was, somebody who knew things said, you know, when somebody like that dies, 25 to 30 years later, his wisdom comes back into the public spotlight, which is now. So I'm here to share as much as possible about what I learned from him and what he learned in his 56-year experiment, because it's very much needed right now.
I would very much agree with that. Can you think of, there's so much we can get into, and there's obviously 500 pages. I wasn't aware of that part of it.
500 and 270. That's...
Can you think of one thing that most people probably don't know about Buckminster Fuller?
Most people don't know a lot about him. Okay. Most people don't know them. One important thing is that he lived 56 years of his life as a personal experiment. And he was going to kill himself, and he was going to commit suicide in 1927. It was like the It's a Wonderful Life thing. He had a life insurance policy. He had lost all his money and his family's money because he decided that he was, rather than build, make money, he wanted to make sense, and he wanted to build good houses, and he lost all of their money. He had a great, what he was building was incredibly good, but it didn't fit into what people knew. So he lost all his money, and he was going to commit suicide, and he had an epiphany. He found himself walking 2 feet above the ground in a sphere of white light. And a voice said, you don't have the right to do that. And then he had to figure out what to do. And what he wound up doing is creating what wound up being a 56-year experiment to determine and document what one individual could do to make a difference that could not be achieved by any corporation or organization, no matter how large or powerful. And when he died in 1983, and the key is the document, because he saved everything. So when he died in 1983, he had 40-some patents. He'd written all these books. He was doing 150 lectures a year, even when he was, 87 years old. He's doing a lot of stuff. So one person can make a difference, and his life proves it.
So I'm going to be going back and forth with Bucky and yourself during this thing. So okay. There's no linear kind of thing. This isn't meant to be introduction to him and a biography about him like your first book is. It's about you as well as the writer of all this stuff. So can you tell us one thing that most people probably don't know about you?
One thing that most people don't know much about me. Okay. I am not a known person.
What about even people in your family, in your personal life?
That's one thing that people don't know about me. At one time, I thought I should keep a chronophile like he did and save everything, and it got to be a clutter.
Overwhelming.
Yeah, huh? It's like try to save everything and keep a record of everything you do. It's pretty, and he was doing it when it was, all paper.
Yeah.
And so I tried it. It didn't work so well.
It's very tough, isn't it?
Yeah,
thanks for that. I've actually tried to do stuff like that myself, too. Trying to keep consistent with it is, pretty tough, too.
Right. Eventually, he had a staff doing it, but that wasn't for many years.
How did you get started with this whole thing? Do you have any – so these are the two books. You wrote this first book. When was that?
It was first published in 1988.
Still in print. Awesome. Had you done any writing previous to that in a book form, or was it
– No.
What's your background in writing?
Well, I actually have a degree in journalism, but it was more in graphics. And I didn't really realize that I didn't start writing until computers came, before typewriters. I was not a very big typewriter writing person because it was too cumbersome. And once computers, I remember our first computer, and I was like, wow, I can just change things, instantly. Yeah. And it was like, that changed everything. In fact, the first book was written on a computer, but it was so long ago that they would not accept an electronic manuscript. It had to be printed out and sent to them, and then they reset it. So, yeah, that's when I said, now, I write a lot. But if it wasn't for computers, thank you, Steve Jobs. I've never had anything except an Apple computer, by the way. If it wasn't for computers, I wouldn't be doing this.
Great. So what is it that you know, this might be kind of a question that what is it that motivates this and the reason for this? I mean, I have a feeling that there's a lot of different
things. Oh, it's really simple. I mean, we're a species on the verge of extinction, in case anybody, you know, and it actually could happen tomorrow or next month, and it doesn't have to happen. Bucky was living as a global citizen in the 30s and 40s and 50s when people, that wasn't even a concept that anybody thought about. And so here's a guy, and what he was doing was he called himself a comprehensive anticipatory design scientist. Comprehensive, interested in everything, anticipatory, looking to the future, design scientist. And so what he was looking is designs for that would solve problems that he saw would show up 50 to 100 years in the future. Because he knew that we humans are not that smart, that we don't, you know, we don't think ahead. We don't have any future vision pretty much. And he saw that the way things work for humans right now, it's still true, is there's this thing called emergence by emergency. So the emergency shows up, whatever it is, and we look around and go, what's the first solution? Whatever solution that we can find, that's what we do. And so he was creating these solutions, the geodesic dome being the most famous of them, for problems that he saw would come, you know, in the future. So, what was your question? Why did
that was great.
So here's a global citizen.
What motivated all of this?
Here's a global citizen, and here's a guy who really was looking, how can you and I, the little average citizen, make a difference? We don't have, without any resources or anything, like you've done with the podcasts here, you can do that. You know, and he showed that people can make a difference and do make a difference. In fact, the only thing that makes a difference is individual human beings.
And the fact that we're all, the global citizenship shows that, proves that we're all interconnected.
Right.
And so he was like one of the persons that was really into this whole we thing, not this me thing.
Right. And I mean, in the new book, several people, including myself, but other people said, you know, he was a Buddhist.
Yeah.
And the Buddhist's whole thing is with and for all beings. So he, you know, he realized that we were going to reach a point very soon where it was going to be everybody or nobody. And he started working on that way before anybody cared.
Yeah.
And now people care. You know, they say he was the first environmentalist. I don't know, you know, but they say.
So when was Bucky Fuller? When was he born? What year?
He was born in 1895 and he died in 1983.
So when was his very first time or the very first thing that he got any type of recognition for?
When he was 5 years old.
5 years
when
old.
When he was in, so for, you have to understand that he was, when he was born, for the first 5 years of his life, 4.5 years of his life, he was basically blind because he didn't have glasses and nobody knew that he couldn't see. This was in 1895.
Wow.
So he saw everything as blurry. And when we finally figured it out and they got glasses, they put glasses on him. He never saw eyes. He thought the things that his sister was telling him, that she was making it up. And so when he was in kindergarten, because he couldn't see really well, they gave all the kids, toothpicks and, dried peas to make structures. And he, you know, all the kids made little square things, you know, houses and whatnot. And he, because he couldn't see very well, did it by feel. And he wanted to feel things that were solid. And when you build things like that, you triangulate everything because that's the way nature goes. And that's the way. And so he built this thing out of triangles. And all the teachers went, whoa, well, you know, what is this thing? It turns out, and about 60 years later, he patented it. It's called the octet truss, which you see, you know, when you go to concert anywhere, you see these triangular beams that go across that hold the line. That's called an octet truss. He patented that, and that was the thing that he built when he was 5 years old.
So what about, so that's when he built it, but he didn't actually get any national or...
No, now he's 5 years old.
When did he first get some type of an attention from... So obviously, the lines of communication and the media were certainly a lot different than then, but also that stuff did spread around. Just like being a journalist, it probably started out maybe in some local.
Well, what happened was a lot of things happened, but the big kind of first invention was the Dymaxion house, which he built a model and started showing it around to people, and eventually it got into it was called the 4D house before, and it they put it into Marshall Fields in Chicago, the department store, because they were showing these futuristic furniture and they wanted to get people into the store. And so they had his model of his house. And that's where the word Dymaxion, which is his trademark word for things, came from. Some advertising guy created it for him. He created it out of the words dynamic, ion, and maximum. So then he started getting more and more publicity, but he didn't really, really, really become that famous until the invention of the geodesic dome, which changed the world.
And what year was the geodesic dome?
It was built it was invented about 1948 and 1949, but it didn't get publicity until he was messing around with college students and they were building different ones. But this is the emergence by emergency. So he got it patented. He got a really good patent not because he wanted the money, but because he knew that when the need came around, big corporations would do anything they could to break his patent. And he would not get credit. He wasn't looking for the money. He was looking for the credit because he was doing this experiment, this 56-year experiment. And it was really important. And so he had this great patent. And I don't know if you remember when the Russians were going to come and get us over the pole. You know, they were going to send missiles over the North Pole to kill us in the 50s.
I remember hearing about the Russians.
Right.
But
So back in the day, in those days, what happened was we needed something to protect us, to protect our radar that we're putting way up. It was called the distant early warning, the dew line. And they had to set, and the structure had to be light enough to fly in. You had to be able to erect it in a couple hours because it was in the frozen tundra. And it had to let radar penetrate. And the only thing that they could find was Bucky Fuller's geodesic dome in fiberglass. And when that was the only thing they could find, he goes, yeah, fine. And by the way, it's going to cost you a lot of money. However, when the hippies wanted to build these structures and people wanted to do experimental things, he never charged them for the patent. So that's when he got to be really famous. And that's when, you know, the geodesic dome, most people know him as the guy who invented the geodesic dome. They don't know him as a poet and a philosopher and all these other things. So,
hey, Michael, are you familiar with the, do you remember the geodesic dome? Michael and I grew up in Ohio, and what city was that in? Do you remember? Yeah. I went, they had a little boys camp. I mean, this was back late 60s, early 70s that we went in Ohio, and there was a geodesic dome over there on the woods somewhere.
Oh, okay. There's a lot of them. They tend to be built out far because if you build them in the city, they don't – all the people that license all this stuff and they don't know what to do with them because it doesn't fit into this cube structure.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what they did with it, but
it is the most, you know, it's the structure. It's the only structure known to humans that the larger you build them, the stronger they get. The ultimate is to cover a city with a dome, and they're looking at doing that in Houston, covering the entire city of Houston. You wouldn't be able to see it. It's very cold. It would always be 72 degrees. It would never rain. It would always be sunny, and you'd never see the dome because it'd be too far away.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I like that idea or not.
But you wouldn't have to think of all the heating and cooling bills because you wouldn't pay to heat or cool. Everything would always be 72 degrees.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. So you were saying about that's the thing that he's most famous for. Let's get into a little bit of the other things. We've spoken before, so I know it's this incredibly vast amount, but what's the speculation on how many things that he's actually created or invented?
Well, he's invented a lot of things, but the thing about the inventions is he wasn't inventing things to invent things, the Dymaxion car, which now there's been a fourth one built, you know, which people can, you know, you can see is, was in Miami recently. Sir Norman Foster had a fourth one built perfectly to match all Bucky's thing. But the thing about the inventions is not the inventions, but what he was really doing. He was really looking to find nature's generalized principles, the things that are universal so that we humans all can live in harmony with nature by following nature's principles. So, and the inventions were to demonstrate to people, because he knew that people, you could talk about things from now to till forever. And Bucky used to talk about, he said, you know, everybody's got good ideas, but if you don't put them into action, if you don't do something about them, they're worthless. So he would build these inventions so that he could talk about things. So geodesic dome is a perfect example. I mean, it's the structure that is the vision of how we need to be, because there's no point on a geodesic dome that's any more important than any other. And if you, on a total geodesic sphere, if you whack it, they had one that was built one out of these steel girders. It was like a big thing, and a truck backed into one of them, and it bent the one on the far opposite side, because it just radiates. No point is any stronger than any other. No person on the planet is more important than any other. And so that's what he was doing all the time. And he was looking to solve these problems. You know, how the main problems, housing, transportation. I mean, the Dymaxion car in 1933. I mean, he built this car, if you can call it a car. It was a transport, he called it. It would go 120 miles an hour. It got 30-some miles to the gallon on a standard Ford engine. It seated 12 people comfortably, and it would park in a space that was 3 inches longer than the car itself, because it had front-wheel drive and then a rear wheel that would turn in. So it was, you know, this is the kind of stuff that he was doing, but he wasn't doing it to build cars. He was doing it to show these principles.
And creating this symbiotic relationship between all things that are inhabiting the planet.
Right.
And
that's what you
being
have.
In accordance with each other and being in harmony and existing right. together. Is there a better word for it than inventions that might work?
Artifacts. You call everything artifacts. Like, and this, I mean, artifact is anything. This is an artifact too. You know, yeah. It's like, it's you create artifacts so that people have something to work with.
So is there a speculation? It would be hard to imagine there would be something exact, because I know that this guy's pretty amazing. Is there a speculation on how many quote-unquote artifacts he's been responsible for?
Well, it depends if you count books and whatever, you know. I mean, but in terms, there have been books of his inventions, you know, like, and the actual physical inventions, probably 20, 25, 30, something like that.
Cool. I know, didn't you say that he kept up? This is the stuff that we were getting into the last time we spoke about how he kept everything that he created as a.
He kept everything. Yeah. He saved everything. That was the documentation. The archive.
Is there like a Bucky Fuller Museum? Or?
No, but all the archive finally got to Stanford, and they're still working on putting, you know, categorizing everything and yeah,
Paul Allen could get involved. He spent all that money getting Jimi Hendrix's guitar and his shorts and stuff like that. So let's talk a little bit. Oh yeah, how many books is he personally responsible for writing?
About 30 or 40. I'm not quite sure the number. A lot.
Is there anything in particular that you want to say about any of those, or perhaps which one's your favorite?
This is the book to read, Critical Path.
Critical Path.
It was one of the last books that he wrote, and it's the best book that he wrote in terms of his vision, the whole global vision. And
looks like you were trying to meet him on thickness there, weren't you?
Well, it is pretty cool.
Can you give us a brief description about Critical Path?
Well, Critical Path is the path that you need to go to achieve something, and this is the critical path for humanity.
Wow.
So he talks about his, you know, his entire life and how he got here and how we got here. It's kind of, I had a job that I spent a year at and I got totally burned out. I mean, totally burned. It was like a 24/7 kind of job thing. And, I spent three or four months sitting on the beach in Laguna Beach, California, because this book had just come out, studying this book. I mean, you don't read it, you study it. And it was like absorbing it. And then I moved on to actually, then I found out that he was living in Southern California and I could actually go work with the Institute.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is that, would that be the one, or is there one particular book that maybe not everybody knows as well, but that's really, really inspiring to you?
To me?
Yeah.
Actually, the book that nobody knows about that's inspiring to me was not written by him. It's called Cosmic Fishing. It was written by Ed Applewhite, who collaborated with him on the other major book that I don't recommend people read, because it's called Synergistics 1 and Synergistics 2. They're both that thick. And they're all about, so all the math that you and I were taught in school is all wrong. It's all a lie.
Because I was terrible at it.
Yeah, because it's all based on right angles and squares, that none of which have any integrity because they don't hold their shape. Synergistic math is based on triangles. And Bucky created a whole math that was completely different from what we're taught. And he wrote these two books, and Ed Applewhite was his collaborator for, I don't know, like 10 years to get these books written. And then he wrote this little book called Cosmic Fishing about what they were doing, how they did it. And it's a really nice look into Bucky's life and how they, you know, how he actually worked. I mean, he was not an easy person to work with.
Yeah.
Because he had, and he was rewriting his books even after they were published.
Yeah.
Which is like, you can't do that, you know.
Yeah, so, well, those kind of creative minds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, how many, you know, I just like to throw out this goofy stuff, but how many books do you think were written by other people about Buckminster Fuller and his work?
Oh, there's been about, I would say there's probably on the order of 50 to 100, something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot.
So and it's not like thousands or
no,
anything.
No, not yet.
Not yet.
But.
So you're doing pretty good. You got two.
Right.
Your second one's coming out pretty soon. We'll get into that in a little bit.
Yeah.
Great. So why don't we talk a little bit about, and I like what that you brought it up, because it's something I had written down ahead of time, was about the, you know, not only about the, I already forgot the word, but, you know, the thing they were talking about, the inventions and stuff.
Artifacts.
The artifacts, but the philosophies and the ways of thinking and stuff. What are some of the stuff that, along those lines that he had created?
Well, the first most important thing, which is also the first thing in A Fuller View, because this is a book of quotes and explanations of the quotes, the first thing is start with universe. Start with the whole. So, and you don't, you know, you people, the problem we've gotten into is we start here, and then when we get to here, we go, oh my God, we made a big mistake. You know, we've done it. We're not looking like our ancestors used to do, seven generations into the future, you know, which is a common kind of indigenous people's kind of thing.
Oh, it's always about seven generations forward.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But we don't do that anymore.
No, we don't.
I mean, when they invented the, and then another one is that I like to use a lot is the quote, you can make money or you can make sense. The two are mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
And people go, well, does that mean I'm not supposed to, I'm supposed to be poor? And no.
It means exactly the opposite.
It means that if you're doing something when you started at the beginning, if your intention is to make money, you probably won't make sense. And if your intention is to make sense and it's supposed to be, you'll be supported. And the internal combustion engine, once again, is the real, it's like, look at that. Those guys, there were a lot of other options back when they came up with an internal combustion engine that they could have done. And they wanted to make money. They didn't want to make sense. And now this thing could be the thing that kills us all.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, our perspective of what wealth and prosperity is just completely pretty whack as far as I'm concerned, especially in a really hardcore capitalist society, because there isn't a lot of sense to it, the madness of it all. For me personally, that's my view.
Well, and the 1%, 99% is like finally showing up.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bucky was a proponent of it's everybody or nobody. And,
yeah.
And he used to say that all the time. It's everybody or nobody.
It's in the Constitution. I'm not a nationalist or a hardcore patriot or anything, but it is we the people. It's not those of us who can stomp on everybody else and have more.
Right. It's we the people. In fact, I use that phrase a lot in the book. When I talk about we the people, I'm not talking about Americans.
No. We're talking about
everybody.
Creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We the people.
And it's not just humans either. It's animals and nature and everything.
All sentient beings.
Thank you. So did he have any particular religion or political affiliation that he acknowledged at all? Or
Well, first of all, he was opposed to organized religion, period. Because he saw that organized religion was about divide and conquer, and to keep conquer, keep divided.
Yeah.
Although his great grandfather was a Unitarian minister, and all the men in his family had either been lawyers or ministers until him, until his father. His father was a merchant, but you know they broke away. So he would say, he was very big about God and spirituality. He wrote tons of poems and things about God and spirituality, and he always talked about God, but it wasn't organized religion. It was about spirituality, and he made that distinction quite clear. Politically, although he was in the Navy and he served in World War I, and he said, you know, he would at the end, he you know, in the last 30 years of his life, he would go, I'm apolitical. I have no politics. He would say politics is obsolete, if not lethal.
Mm.
So, because it's divide and conquer. It's divide and conquer. And if there's enough to go around, which is the basis of everything Bucky Fuller was about, that there is enough to go around now. And if there's enough to go around, we don't have to fight over it anymore. And that's what politics and nations are all about.
So he probably wouldn't have been watching the Super Bowl yesterday, huh?
Actually, he probably would have because he loved football.
That's interesting.
He was going to be quarterback of the Harvard football team, even though he was short, except he had his knee got hurt. But he loved football.
But probably some more from a athletic, vibrant kind of perspective, and not the competition.
Well, not the money competition part of it, you know?
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, we're going to take a little break here. We're here on episode 24 of Green Reviews. We're here with Stephen Seiden, and we're talking about Buckminster Fuller, and we're going to come right back after the short break, and we're going to get into his new book. Right back.
You're listening to Greener Views. Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe.
With naive mind shield like a helmet, they would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue disillusioned little. In the vision of one resides all, destroy the individual, for this is critical. The self ain't everything, hands to grasp, to cling, to mask material vastly shipwrecked beings. At last, release the greed amassed with capitalist tasks and contact the mass. Communication is all we have in dwindling fast.
Alrighty, we're back, and we're here with Stephen Seiden, and we're going to get right into it. Tell us about your new book, A Fuller View. What is it about? Just take it over. What's this book about? Why'd you do it?
Okay.
How did it get compiled, and what's from the time that you started to the time it's now? Tell us the whole transition and
the whole thing
transformation. Yeah.
Well, first of all, it wouldn't exist without Facebook, because I re-met an old Bucky friend of mine from 30 years ago on Facebook, and he's a publisher, and it came out of a conversation that we were having online. He lives in England at like 2 in the morning in November of, I can't remember, 2009. And I had written him and asked him about another project that I was working on, because I knew he was a publisher. I didn't really want him to publish it because that's not what he does. That's not what he did at the time. And he sends me back this email at 2 in the morning, says, you know, after 20 years, you must have another Bucky Fuller book in you. And I told him how I used to put on Facebook, I would put a Bucky Fuller quote and then I would put a little explanation, and people loved it. They were like, when it wasn't there, they were like, where is it? You know? And he said, that's the book I want. So I would take Bucky Fuller quote, and then I would write an, you know, explanation commentary so that people could understand it. Because most people don't understand it. And I knew that that was not going to be a bestseller because it's me and Bucky Fuller. Who knows me? Nobody. And so that was one night I had this flash of inspiration, guest commentators, because there's a lot of famous people who are, you know, knew Bucky and hung out with Bucky and or were
certainly inspired by him.
Yeah, tons of them. And so I wrote to Michael in the middle of the night and I said, how about we'll have guests? And he thought, great idea. How many do you think you could get? And I'm like, 12. So we have 42.
Wow.
And it goes all the way from Gary Zukav and John Robbins and Joan Halifax and those kind of famous people to Anna, I can't remember her last name, who's a middle school student, which her piece is really nice. I got her and her teacher in there. And so it's got a lot of different people with a lot of different perspectives. And some of the stories in there have never been – people who have personal experiences, and these stories have never been published.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So why is this book so important right now?
Well, because Bucky lived his life in a way that most of us want to live. I want to live my life that way, and I know you do. It's a how do we contribute? Well, here's a guy who did it. He did it for 56 years, and he proved that it works. I mean, one of his disciplines that he took on in 1927 is that he said, I will no longer work for a living. I will no longer work to earn a living. I will do what needs to be done and that I see is not being attended to. And nature supports that because we're part of nature. There's no artificial trees. There's nothing artificial. You know, nature supports what needs to be done. He said, if I'm doing what needs to be done, I will be supported. So this is like a roadmap. And it's really easy. I don't say this lightly because now other people have said it to me. It's really easily accessible and well organized, I've been told. So that you can, because it's a quote and then, you know, an explanation. So I've actually started reading it myself, you know, like reading it and it's really nice to read at night because you can just open it anywhere before you go to bed and read a few pages and that's all it is. So, yeah.
It's like a daily reflection type of a thing.
Could be.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, is there anything that you would encourage people to look for in this book or to think about while they're checking it out and going through it?
Encourage them to look for.
Or think about.
Well, I would encourage people to look to see how they could apply whatever they're reading to their lives. Because that's the practicality of it is the most important thing. It's like, how do you make a difference? You know, that's in our life where we are in, you know, the United States, where we're, you know, the most privileged people on the planet, most people are not trying to, you know, find food and shelter and what. And so then the question always becomes, well, what do I do with my life? You know, like on my deathbed, you know, that whole on my deathbed, did I work not long enough? Whatever. What do I do?
Yeah.
And Bucky knew what to do. And it's really simple. It's like people ask me this all, well, how do you know what to do? And well, you do what Bucky did. You look around wherever you are and you see what needs to be done that's not being attended to. And you do that. It might be washing the dishes. It might be creating a podcast. Who knows? It might be right. This book is a direct result of that. If somebody else would have come along and done this Bucky Fuller work that I've been doing for 30 years, said, hey, I'm doing that, I'd go, good, I can find something else to do.
Because there's plenty to do.
There's plenty to do.
And life is actually pretty simple. It's just we complicate it.
Tend to, yeah.
Yeah, and as far as it being provided for, we don't really need very much to be provided for. We happen to complicate that up pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't you give us a little insight as you choose to tell us what it looks like as far as the publicity and the publication date and what people can look for and stuff. And we'll talk about how they could contact you. And, of course, it'll be on the site and in the video and stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's available. They're pre-selling it on Amazon, and you can buy it anywhere. And you can pre-buy it on my web. If you buy it on my website, you'll get a signed copy. Ooh. Yeah. And a few other little goodies to go with it. I'm looking to organize what I'm calling, let's see if I can get this right, the Buckminster Fuller Spaceship Earth World Livingry Tour or something like that. Basically, to share the message is wherever I'm asked. That's what Bucky did. You know, he would go wherever he was invited. So I'm actually looking and having people say, hey, he's available now to do this because he's finally finished writing the book. He can talk about it and he can share these quotes. I mean, the quotes are the cool part for me are the quotes, you know, these simple things. Start with the universe. Yeah. So call me Trim Tab. Trim Tab, very important. People need to know about Trim Tab. So that's what I'm up to. And Trim Tab is like, the book is a Trim Tab. Your podcast is a Trim Tab. Yeah, you could
I'm
talk
about it. I'm not exactly sure what that is.
Well, ask me and I'll tell you.
Okay, what is a Trim Tab?
So a Trim Tab is, you know, people think that.
I thought it was like a little diet pill. I'm like, what the heck is this guy
I know, somebody
about?
Said that.
There
somebody
is something called Trim Tab.
Like, so on the back on the back of a rudder, like okay. the big
on a
ship.
A boat or something.
A big ship. On the back of a rudder, people okay. think that they steer these big ships with the big rudder. That's not how they steer the okay. ship. On the back of the rudder, there's a little bitty, you know, miniature rudder, and that's called the Trim Tab. So when they turn okay. the wheel of the ship, it doesn't turn the rudder because that would take a lot of effort.
Yeah.
But it turns that little Trim Tab, which changes the pressure on the rudder, which causes the rudder to move, which causes the ship to turn. And on Bucky's gravestone, it says, call me Trim Tab. That was what he wanted to have. So basically what we need to do, if we're going to really make a difference in the world, we need to look to where the Trim Tab is. The Trim Tab for me, yes, I could talk to one person at a time about this quotes and the books and whatever. That doesn't work. I mean, that'll work, but it's not as good as talking on a podcast or writing a book. So that's how we get the message out. You be a Trim Tab.
So how can people, How do you what do you need from people in regards to the book, and what do you need people to do, and how do you need or not need, but I mean, well, of course we do all need each other, but how would you like people to participate in what you're trying to do with this book?
Well, okay, first there's the website www.buckyfullernow.com. So Bucky, and basically, we're looking to take the message out live because I love live events, being with people. And hopefully, then there are other pieces of things that we want to do. And there, you know, this is, like I said, this is volume one. I have lots more of this. And I've put some of it together. And we're also looking to make more digital media, get it out there so that people. So basically, so that his message is back in the public spotlight again, even though he's not here in a physical body anymore.
Yeah, and I had the pleasure of being able to go to this little, almost like a little Seattle neighborhood group at the coffee shop over there. Mm-hmm. And was that Ballard, I think, right? And
yeah,
it was pretty cool. I mean, there was a. It wasn't a big place, but it was a pretty good sized place, but it was packed.
It was packed. Yeah, we had 50
people
there.
Coming in, and it was like this tiny little coffee shop, and it was like people are going up the steps and sitting on the steps and sitting in the doorways.
Yeah, we had a lot of people there talking about Bucky Fuller.
And people were really – I'll be honest with you. I'm 51. I'll be 51 soon, and I don't know that much about Bucky Fuller. I mean, I hung around the geodesic dome when I was a kid and didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
I just thought, wow, that's kind of cool, but – you know, I've had an opportunity to learn a little bit more over time goes on and being involved in environmental stuff. People yeah. talk about them. But people were really intriguing and very passionate. And your discussion and everything about it was really, really great. And we did some version of this last year. And it was, I think we went for 75 minutes. And it was, there was no signs of stopping, just the fact that it didn't.
I can, yeah. I have that same Bucky Fuller issue. I could go on for hours, hours and hours.
And I'd have to say, personally, from the exposure I've had to it, it's extremely intriguing. So, great. Well, let's you know, we talked ahead of time, and we got a lot of stuff, but let's just draw on a couple of questions. How can one person make a difference with his or her life, just as Bucky did?
Well, like I said before, what you do is – you look around wherever you are.
Gotcha.
And do what's needed to be done.
It's
needed
very
to, that's
simple.
Not being attended to. However, if you really want the bonus point, the bonus is if you really want your life to work, if you, you know, people want their relationship, they want their money, what all that stuff. Yeah. It's like Bucky said, pick the biggest problem that you see and solve that. So the people who are working on solving world hunger,
yeah,
they don't worry about their relationships or their money because they got things, you know, that kind of just takes care of itself. So the bigger the issue that you pick to work on, not saying that you have to do that right away, but the bigger you work, the rest of the things just take care of themselves.
Mm.
I mean, I'm watching that with this book because I just said, okay, I'm going to be the Bucky Fuller guy because nobody else is. And that's really, truly, if somebody else would have come along, I've been waiting for somebody else to write this book for a long time, and nobody did, and it needed to be done, and I really didn't want to do it because it's a lot of work, and it's a lot, you know, blood, sweat, and tears for a year. I mean, I spent a year, and I would do, did you ever see the movie City Slickers?
Yeah.
And Curly goes, find your one thing. For the last year, people would talk to me, and I go, I got my one thing. Don't bother me with anything else. You know, this was my one thing. And so everything else kind of takes care of itself. And
And if it hadn't been for that, there would have been another thing in your life that would have been your thing, because there's always
a thing.
There's always a thing.
Right. And the other piece of it is, you know, if somebody comes along and says, I want to be the Bucky Fuller person, then I get to go do something else.
Yeah.
And I'll find something else that's fun, too.
Yeah.
I got to, you know.
I totally agree, and I totally get that. So what about the one, why is war and competition, why war and competition are obsolete in the new paradigm in which there is enough of everything to support all life on Earth?
Got it. So that's the other piece of the Bucky Fuller philosophy that's important.
Yeah.
In the 30s, he worked for Fortune magazine and Phelps Dodge. He worked with, not for. He was not an employee. But he started doing this thing where he was inventorying all the resources on the planet, which sounds like, you know, no big deal. But you got to understand, this was before there were computers or calculators or anything like that. He was inventorying all the zinc and all the copper. And he saw what happens is every time it comes back around, does a thing called recycling, which nobody had ever heard of back in those days. We added something to it. And the something that we added was knowledge. And then when we add knowledge to the material, we can do more with less.
Mm.
It's a big, huge concept. More with less, more with less, more with less. And so, I mean, it's this, when you take out, you know, your cell phone, your smartphone, there's no new material in there. They didn't bring some material from space out to create that cell phone. But it's the same material they were using 100 years ago, but they couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Because we keep adding knowledge to things, and we keep doing more with less. And Bucky saw that we were doing so much more with so as much less that we would reach a point where there would be enough to go around. That's what he saw. And then he calculated the date, and he said it was 1976. We now know that in 1976, there was enough food to feed everybody on the planet. That's when it happened, because we were growing so much food. There's enough, and there still is today. We all know that there's enough food to feed everybody on the planet. And 50,000 people died of starvation today, and will die of starvation tomorrow, and will die of starvation the next day. But there's enough food to go around. Well, there's enough of everything. Bucky proved it. So that's when there's enough to go around, war becomes obsolete. Because, see, if we have one loaf of bread and it's me or you, we probably won't fight because we're kind of nice guys and we'll share and whatever. But if it's my kid or your kid, we're going to fight.
It's generally an ego and stuff like that driven.
Yeah. And there's enough, but before there was enough to go around, war, and it was okay. It was, you know, valid to fight for the thing because there wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Now there's enough. That's a paradigm shift that most people don't know about. And it's something people don't know about. Most people don't know that in 1976, we underwent a major paradigm shift. The world changed, and we don't have to fight for everything. There's enough to go around. War is obsolete. War becomes obsolete. Who are we going to pick? Who are we fighting? And it's now been proven all we need to do is take 40% of our military budget and switch it from weaponry to livingry. And everybody eats. Everybody has housing. Everybody has as much education as they want. Everybody has everything that they want or need. And it only takes 40%, not even all of it, but we might as well just do it all. And it's not like people who are in the military don't have something to do. They just go to feeding people and clothing people. And, you know, we shift. and we stop trying to kill each other.
That sounds like a wonderful idea. I love it. So we know about www.buckyfullernow.com, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are there any other web links or email addresses or phone numbers or ways of contact that you'd like to out there?
I'll give you my personal email if you want. And you can go through the website and find me. It's probably easier than giving you my personal email.
So we'll just stick with buckyfullernow.com.
Yeah.
Great. Are there any upcoming events or special offers or information that you want to share with us that's, you know, maybe at least a few weeks out?
Well, we have, if you're in Seattle on April 5th at East West Books at 7 o'clock, we're going to do a book launch signing thing. I've been working with East West Books for a long time.
And April 1 is the official release date.
April 1 is official release. Hopefully on April 1st, I will be in San Francisco, because if you're in San Francisco, they're opening on March 31st, there's a new Bucky Fuller exhibition at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. If you're in Seattle, April something, like the first week in April, they're going to have a geosphere dome that they're going to put up at the Science Center. It's going to be up for 6 weeks.
Wow.
So there's things happening.
Great. Well, there's so much to talk about, and we didn't get to all of it, but we got a lot of great stuff, and we really appreciate the opportunity to do this again. We were sharing before the podcast that when we did this last year on the other way we were doing it, your episode was by far the most popular. And cool. I think that it's because of the subject matter and stuff, but I certainly think it's because you have a tremendous amount of people that you're involved with and connected to, and you really put the word out, so we really thank you for that. So we usually end it with this. Do you have any wise advice or helpful hints or final words that you want to leave us all with?
Yeah, we can all make a difference, and people have proved it, you know, and there are more people proving we're doing things that we never imagined that we could do. We the people. It's we the people, you know, that was what Bucky was for. And as Bucky used, you know, the final thing that he said is the final thing that I'll say is hold on to your integrity no matter what. Personal integrity rocks.
Sweet. And be the trim tab.
Be the trim tab. Yes.
Great. So you have been listening to episode, what episode is this? This is episode 24 of Greener Views. We'd like to thank this episode's guest, Stephen Seiden, for joining us. Thank you for sharing a bit of your world with this podcast interview. We hope you enjoyed your time spent with us today. And
that was fun with you.
best of luck with everything. Does anyone else have anything that they need to ask or put out there before we wrap this up? Randy, Michael?
In the audience.
No, the audience of two. On our next show, episode 25, we will talk with John Nelson about Cove to Clover, which is a big annual race, and amongst other things. And I'm sure on behalf of myself, Daryl Whalen, and our crew, we'd like to say a heartfelt thank you to everybody for listening. Special consideration goes to AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Please check them out. Music is provided by John Henry Scully at slapjazz.com, Dan Fagens at danfagens.com, and J.D. Hobson at jdhobson.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts on ideal guests and topics for the show. You can email us at info@greenerviews.net or call 206-650-4587. Make your day extra special by checking out greenerviews.net and youtube.com/greenerviews for the video version of our episodes, where you'll also find more information over the coming weeks. And lastly, Greener Views is a part of the Healthy Homecast Network. So please go check out the other like-minded podcasts and businesses over at healthyhomecast.com. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network. Check out all their conscientious and sustainably focused podcast programs and businesses at healthyhomecast.com. Greener Views is created, developed, and produced by Daryl Whalen. Our audio engineer is Randy Parcell. Our video engineer is Michael Schwartz of AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Music for this episode was provided by SlapJazz.com, DanFagens.com, and jdhobson.com. Your feedback is important. Please feel free to contact us with any comments or questions, including suggestions for guests and program topics. You can call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info@greenerviews.net. Be sure to check back often. New episodes coming soon.